In the summer of 2021, smoke from wildfires in the West drifted over Vermont. The pandemic was still raging, and Steve and I were back for a second summer. But this time the air was hazy with soot.
I feel it's going to be hot today.
My throat burned. I had trouble breathing, and I was scared about the future.
It's already warmer than when we started out.
And that's when Nancy and I picked up our conversation.
I think I'm probably not the only person who has these 2 a.m. fears that the entire thing is just going to crash and it's going to be like some HBO special with bands of humans roaming
right.
the abandoned freeways.
Ravaging, and, yeah. Lifeboat fighting every man for themselves, right.
Except Nancy Fraser was having none of it.
We can't allow that to happen. To think after the apocalypse, that is too defeatist for me.
She felt the urgency.
Time is short and getting shorter.
But if 40 years of thinking deeply about capitalism has taught her anything, it's the value of a good crisis.
I mean, this is odd to say, but this is the moment I've been waiting for ever since the 1960s. This is the moment where a kind of radicalism is necessary and possible. Because nothing else will work. That I'm sure of. Nothing but real radicalism will work. Look, I do believe that moments of deep and acute crisis, terrible impasses, something's got to give. We can't go on like this. When things get interesting are in these crisis situations, that's when we got the New Deal. You could never have gotten that incrementally. It took a huge shock to the whole system. And it took a fear on the part of the business classes of social revolution from below, of communism, of unions, of and so on.
The New Deal was more of a redesign than a revolution. But Nancy thinks this moment, this crisis, is different.
Climate change is a game changer. It threatens everyone. So I think we should be demanding things like nationalize the oil companies and the fossil fuel companies. Let it become a political question how we're going to generate energy. Nationalize all the energy companies.
Socialize the means of production. Because how could you leave something as critical as the future of the planet up to something as chaotic as a market?
I think planning is part of socialism. It's the alternative to the market.
Forgive me, but the word planning, I'm just sort
it's
of
a good
thinking
word.
Utopia through planning? Somehow.
How could you allow the question of greenhouse gases to just happen however it happens because people think they can make money to invest? No, the IPCC is the nucleus of a greenhouse gas planning commission. It hasn't yet been empowered, but it should be. And you need other comparable things. Planning has to be democratic. It can't be the old communist nomenclatura. This whole question of what to produce, how much, and what to do with surplus.
That is, profits.
These should be fundamental political questions. I think socialism is the democratization of the decision-making about all those questions. And I'm not saying that it requires abolition of all private property. You could simply tax at a very high expropriative degree the profits that represent the surplus and say that's collective property. We all built that together. You didn't do it, as Elizabeth Warren used to say. We did that. You didn't do that as an individual. That's our surplus. We'll decide what to do with it, thank you. But we'll be happy to pay you a nice, cushy salary for, you know, your own personal consumption. But you don't control the surplus. We do.
Do I get to own my house?
Sure. Nothing has to do with personal property is never at stake.
But it's not just about the economy.
For me, capitalism is the name for the social order. I don't equate it with class in the traditional sense of class.
No, when you talk about capitalism, you're not just talking about class and you're not just talking about economy either.
Capitalism is inherently gender asymmetric, inherently racializing. But I do feel the need to name a system that, you know, is the container, let's say, of all of this. There's one system here. I feel very strongly about that. I don't like so-called dual or triple systems theory where we have three systems, capitalism, patriarchy, and white supremacy. No, there's one system, and it generates all of these things in a complex way together.
A majority of the states calls for final ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment.
Nancy got her doctorate in philosophy in the 1970s, during the heyday of the women's movement. Title IX, the ERA, Roe v. Wade. She followed all of it, but was not personally all that interested in gender questions.
But something else was going on because of my marriage at the time.
Remember the charismatic leader from the New Left, the guy she admired so much at the sit-in?
The marriage was not very successful. He was so dominating and took up so much space that I fell very much into a subordinate role. But it wasn't so much about gender. Everybody, all the men around the group, had that same subordinate role to him. So it took a while for me to figure out the gender aspects of it.
Who broke up with whom?
It was more me. It was more me. I just felt that that his voice was too loud in my head. I wanted to hear my thoughts, not as a kind of reaction to him, but mm-hmm. just in and of themselves, for themselves. When the feminism began to resonate more for me at the experiential level was when I left graduate school and went out into the work world as a young philosophy professor. Then, you know, the shit hit the fan, so to speak.
So then you began encountering real sexism?
Oh, my God. I mean, my first job was at the University of Georgia in Athens, Georgia. They said a Marxist feminist from Greenwich Village is coming.
So, yeah.
So I was a lightning rod for a lot of controversy.
But was that fun?
You know, I kind of groove to this. I like to be a troublemaker. Sometimes I go too far and then I regret it and I suddenly say, oh my God, now what have I done? You know. But a lot of me really gets off on that.
So did you make trouble there?
I did.
This is both fascinating and a little foreign to me. The thought of making trouble, really getting into trouble, kind of makes my stomach clench. Especially today, when the social cost of thinking or saying the wrong thing will get you called out publicly. Meanwhile, though, Nancy was alarmed by the direction mainstream liberal white feminism was headed, and she began writing about the dangers of identity politics.
The feminist movement and other successor movements to the New Left were dropping the political economic critique and focusing on the recognition critique at just the moment when neoliberalization was running rampant. So we were not paying attention.
The social safety net begins to erode.
And the working class is taking a huge hit. Unions are being broken. Wages are being driven down. Manufacturing is moving abroad, being replaced by low-wage service work. All the things that we're so familiar with today. That was going on while the various social movements, including feminism, were essentially asleep at the wheel, focused on, you know,
breaking the glass ceiling and leaning
in. Exactly, exactly.
To be a white woman on the left critiquing the language of difference took guts. Her main point, to put it simply, is that when radical movements stop focusing on the redistribution of wealth and power,
and get caught up in identity-based politics, things generally go badly. She sees the same mistake playing out today in the arena of anti-racism and the critique of whiteness and white fragility.
This is poison from my point of view. This I lived through in SDS. The discourse of white privilege came from groups within SDS, including the Weathermen.
This system is going to be overthrown. It's going to mean a fight. And it's going to mean a lot of white people risking a lot of things.
This was a wrong turn then. And now there's amnesia and no one even remembers where the discourse of white privilege came from.
Tell me more about where it came from. I didn't know it had anything to do with the New Left.
Definitely. In this process, when the New Left was basically imploding, part of what was happening, as always happens in these moments of almost like religious awakenings almost, it turns inward at a certain point. White skin privilege, it was originally called.
But isn't it supposed to be a systemic structural picture simply intended to name white privilege? I think so many of the, at least the initial conversations black activists were trying to have with their white colleagues and neighbors was to simply point out, hey, look, you may not think you're racist, but there's a reason you can afford a house and I can't.
Look, it's true that if you just look at things like home ownership, which is the main way that families acquire wealth in America if they're not born into the capitalist class, with redlining and all the forms of residential segregation and indebtedness, it's absolutely true that people who are born white have some advantages even when they're not in the wealthiest strata. That's absolutely true. That's not an issue. But the overwhelming majority of white people are getting screwed by this system. How do you build a powerful political movement to change the system? Not by saying, oh, you are white and bad. Anyway, you know, I sort of feel like things are in some respects better today because there is a much broader understanding of how structural race is in American society. Look, I mean, you know, it's very hard to figure out exactly how to really think about all of this because there is this kind of authoritarian forms of identity policing and
cancel culture.
Cancel culture, political correctness, et cetera, et cetera. People lose their focus on the big picture and look for shortcuts. How we can change people instead of institutions.
How do you make the world a better place when even with the best intentions, you can wind up hurting someone else? We live in a complicated world of overlapping crises, injustice layered upon inequality. There's a phrase Nancy uses that always jumps out at me, mapping the system. In my head, I imagine a crinkled sheet of paper, a guide, maybe, to finding a way forward.
People all over the globe are reacting. They're trying to act to improve their situation, to protect themselves, to have a better life. Some of them are joining political groups to do that or movements, including nasty right-wing proto-fascist movements. Not enough people have a map to understand what the relation between what they're doing is and what the relation with people over there are doing. If each of us can trace the deep roots back to the same system, if we have a name for the system, we can at least talk about, right, how to begin to make radical change. But for God's sake, given the stakes, how can we not try? How can we not try?
Nancy Fraser is a professor of philosophy and politics at the New School for Social Research. She's a celebrated Marxist feminist theorist with multiple degrees, awards, and books to her name. The most recent are Feminism for the 99% and Cannibal Capitalism: How Our System is Devouring Democracy, Care, and the Planet, and What We Can Do About It. To the Best of Our Knowledge comes to you from Wisconsin Public Radio in Madison, Wisconsin. Our producers are Charles Monroe Kane, Shannon Henry Kleiber, and Angelo Bautista. Mark Rickers rules our digital universe. Our technical director and sound designer is Joe Hartke, with help from Sarah Hopeful. Additional music this week comes from Mon Plaisir, Jarbig, Ketza, Oak Studios, and One Man Book. Steve Paulson is our executive producer, and I'm Anne Strangehamps. Be well, and thanks for listening.